It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite teabagging redneck, Mark Galar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. This is your host, Mark Galar. My guest today is Dr. Paul Kengor. He is a best-selling author whose works include Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for Over a Century, God and Ronald Reagan, God and George W. Bush, God and Hillary Clinton, and The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism. His works have been published in magazines ranging from USA Today to the New York Times. He is a frequent commentator on television and radio. He's here today to talk to us about his latest book, The Communist, Frank Marshall Davis, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mentor. Paul, welcome to the show.
Glad to be with you, Mark. Thanks.
Listen, this is a very important book, and it couldn't come out at a better time. For whatever reason, it seems like a lot of people still don't know that Barack Obama was mentored by a card-carrying communist for many years. Why has the media been so silent about this?
Yeah, well, for the obvious reason that the media protects Barack Obama. It's not an honest media. The mainstream media, journalists in this country are not really journalists. I mean, they're sort of journalists. They're political partisans first, and then they're journalists second. And I found, Mark, that what they do, those of us who investigate Obama, well, for the audacity of doing that, which is really their job, what the media should be doing, the mainstream media then in turn investigates us. So rather than looking at, wow, look at what this guy found on Obama, or Obama's mentor, or Obama's background, I need to look into this some more. Instead they say, who is this person who's looking into, who is this? You know, and then they're outraged, rending of garments, screaming blasphemy, and then they look at us. But what I found with this book, and I'm not surprised by this, is that they've completely ignored my book. And I know that that's a sign that I got it right. Because if I was wrong, if my facts were wrong, they would attack me. But because I have them right, they're ignoring me. So I'm not surprised.
Well, just to show you that we're in the same club, although it's one that's kind of touchy for a lot of reasons, I produced and narrated all of the evidence videos that Sheriff Arpaio has shown at his two press conferences involving the Obama probe, and I can tell you that Sheriff Arpaio is sitting on a mountain of computer forensic evidence that shows that several key documents in Obama's life have been altered, and we get the exact same treatment. We actually had a press person who stood up and smeared everybody on the stage, and we found out later that he's part of a nonprofit group with ties to Obama's law firm, Perkins and Coy. So we know what it's like to be ignored, and we know what it's like to have people ridicule you. And frankly, most people don't even realize that there are four separate eligibility issues, and only one of them even involves the birth certificate. That's how good the media's done a job of ignoring Sheriff Arpaio. So I'm right there with you. I know what they do. They either ridicule you or say that you're part of some kind of a conspiracy theory, or they attack you personally, or again, their favorite weapon is to ignore. So again, that means you've done a great job.
Names. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the whole Tea Party, they've smeared the whole Tea Party.
Sure, we're violent. We're not like those peaceful Occupy people.
Right, right. Calling them, you know, racists, and you know, that's you would think that after decades of the left calling everyone who disagrees with them a racist, you know, from Ronald Reagan, you know, to George W. Bush, you know, men who couldn't have been more sensitive to race, you know, they take anybody they disagree with who they're having a hard time responding to, and they smear them.
And that's the tactic. I've seen it. And let me tell you also that I have battled alongside Lord Christopher Monckton III, Viscount of Brenchley, who's basically the biggest pain in the butt to Al Gore on a global scale. He follows the guy everywhere and basically refutes his facts, that they do the same thing against anybody who refuses to acknowledge that anthropogenic global warming is occurring and is something that's going to destroy the world. It's the same exact you know, same exact set of tactics, Alinsky-style tactics are being used. So once again, it means you've done a good job. Now let's get into the book a little bit, because you point out that there are numerous references in Obama's book, Dreams from My Father, regarding Frank. And you're telling us, well, actually, I guess it was Kincaid and, what is it, Romerstein, or I don't have the name in front of me, but that said that this is actually Frank Marshall Davis. How do we know this is Frank Marshall Davis and not someone else named Frank?
Yeah, it's definitely Frank Marshall Davis. Everyone acknowledges that, even the liberal Obama biographers who don't dare call Davis a communist and try to portray him as this like stoic civil rights crusader. I mean, they all acknowledge that it's Frank Marshall Davis. The Obama campaign back in 2007, 2008 did so. So there's no question about that. What is interesting, and you know, ought to make the media interested in the story, is that Obama never one time in the entire book gives his full name. And that's because he knows the political sensitivity of acknowledging a mentor throughout the 1970s, from the time he was 9 years old until the time he went off to college at Occidental, of acknowledging this man who was a literal card-carrying member of the Communist Party, who trashed the American way, who attacked, by the way, mainly Democrats, because it was men like Harry Truman that were opposing Stalin. When Davis joined the party and was writing for party publications, editing party publications, and I should note here, Mark, that Obama refers to him as Frank 22 times in Dreams from My Father. There's dozens of more references via pronouns, other forms of reference. But 10 years later, that book came out in 1995, Dreams from My Father. 10 years later, the audio version of Dreams from My Father came out in 2005. And that's an abridged version, but in that abridged version, every single reference to Frank, it has been purged. They've all been taken out, and it's not like, okay, well, you know, Frank was mentioned on pages, say, 15 to 18 in the Hawaii section of the original Dreams from My Father, and they just took out that section. No, Frank was mentioned in every single section of the original Dreams. There's three parts, you know, part one, part two, part three. He's mentioned in all three parts. He's mentioned when Obama's in Hawaii, of course, when Obama goes to Africa, to Europe, when he goes to Chicago, first thing that he does is he visualizes Frank. He thinks of Frank. Where would Frank be at this moment? So all of those references to Frank in 2005, when Obama had by then made his famous 2004 speech at the Democratic Convention, clearly is pursuing higher office, the presidency. Those were all purged from the audio version. And here again, the mainstream media has no interest in even asking why and wondering if this should be something that they might want to ask the president about.
Well, of course not. And let me say this about Dreams from My Father. There's a little blurb in the front of it in the introduction that says, with the exception of my family and a handful of public figures, the names of most characters here have been changed for the sake of their privacy. Now, Dreams was originally released in 1995. Frank Marshall Davis died in July of 1987. Why does a dead man need privacy?
Yeah, well, and I mean, in this case, we all know why. It's again because Davis was an actual party member, and he was considered so radical, Mark, that he was placed on the federal government security index, which meant that if a war broke out between the United States and the Soviet Union, Frank Marshall Davis could be placed under immediate arrest. And people should pause and think about that. I mean, if Barack Obama had a mentor, an influence throughout the 70s, who was that radical that he was on the federal government security index, I assure you, I guarantee you, that Obama would have difficulty getting a security clearance for an entry-level federal government job.
And let me put this into perspective for liberals who like to listen and send me hate mail. What you're going to have to do to understand this, liberals, is pretend for a second that we're talking about Mitt Romney,
right,
and that Mitt Romney had been mentored by a member of the Ku Klux Klan for 9 years during his formative years. Now do you get it? Okay, fine. Go ahead.
Right. That's right. Or, you know, take, you know, liberals, just take somebody from the right that you don't like. You know, say Mitt Romney had been mentored by a John Bircher. Let's
mm-hmm.
say that Mitt Romney, I think this is a fair comparison, would have had a mentor who was sympathetic to Hitler and the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Davis was pro-Soviet. I mean, liberals, you got to think about this. Now listen to me. The communists were not your friends. Okay, they're way off to the farthest extremes of the left. They targeted Democrats. They targeted FDR, Harry Truman, George Marshall, Frank Marshall Davis called George Marshall's Marshall Plan white colonialism, imperialism, and slavery. They opposed the Truman Doctrine, NATO, everything. They targeted your guys. They hated your guys. And now they pledged them. They literally pledged themselves as their the card that they carried said, to, quote, ensure the triumph of Soviet power in the United States, quote, unquote. They pursued a Soviet America. They were so radical that the very first presidency that dealt with these guys when the American Communist Party was formed in Chicago in September 1919, the Woodrow Wilson presidency, Wilson called these guys tyrants, terrorists, barbarians. He sent his attorney general, Alexander Mitchell Palmer, after them to deport them. They were so dangerous. You know, your guys didn't like these guys either for good reason. And when Frank Marshall Davis was called to Washington to testify on his pro-Soviet activities, it was by Democratic-run committees. And so now here you're defending the very guys that attacked your guys. And you're doing so, why? Because in this case, one of these guys mentored Obama. And that guy is sitting in his grave right now, howling and laughing at how you guys are being used as dupes for this yet again.
Well, I think one of your previous books dealt with the dupes on the left, and there were times when it seemed uncertain as I read your book as to whether or not Frank Marshall Davis was a duper or a dupee, because he seemed to seriously believe that there was no racism in Russia.
Right, yeah, he made that argument that, you know, racism, I mean, that you had American communists who were constantly arguing, as they were calling FDR a fascist and a tyrant, saying FDR wants to start World War III, that kind of thing. And they were arguing that the Soviets had abolished unemployment, homelessness, I mean, you know, all kinds of crazy claims.
Paul, we have to break away for a minute, but we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
And if you'd like to learn how you can get a solar generator for your family, just go to teapartypowerhour.com and click on the appropriate ad. While you're there, you'll also see ads for solar ovens, extended life light bulbs, and life-saving survival food packets.
Are you worried about the economy? Have you ever wondered if the politicians and the bankers are going to bring the whole thing crashing down? If so, pay close attention. Because in an economic meltdown, non-hybrid seeds could become more valuable than even silver and gold. After all, securing a source of food for your family is the single most important thing you can do. Introducing the Survival Seed Bank, the perfect mix of germination-tested non-hybrid seeds. You get enough seeds to plant a full-acre crisis garden that can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And the best part? is that these seeds have not been genetically modified in any way. Remember, in a real economic crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. Prepare your family today.
Prepare your family today by going to TeaPartyPowerHour.com and clicking on the ad for the Survival Seed Bank. Now, while you're there, you're going to see ads for a lot of other products that can help your family in the event of a disaster, whether the disaster is government-made or natural. You're going to see ads for things like solar-powered ovens, solar-powered electrical supplies, and freeze-dried food that can provide your family with immediate nutrition in the event of an economic meltdown. Once again, the place to go is TeaPartyPowerHour.com. And we are back at the Tea Party Power Hour. Our guest is Dr. Paul Kengor. He is the author of The Communist, a book that talks all about Frank Marshall Davis, who was Barack Obama's communist mentor. Dr. Kengor, we were discussing American card-carrying communists and how they believed that the Soviet Union had achieved a lot of things that in reality they had not achieved. Tell us a little bit more about this group.
There's a really crazy segment of this group led by black American communists like Paul Robeson, who we now know is actually a party member, William Patterson, who was actually the mentor to Frank Marshall Davis, Obama's mentor. These guys were advancing the absurd thesis that the Soviets had abolished racism. And Frank Marshall Davis picked that up. And he said, you know, why can't our country be like the Soviet Union, which has abolished racism? Instead, we have white hoods in the White House under Harry Truman. You know, we have all these racist Democrats who are destroying the country. That's who he targeted. And they use that, they agitated. By the 1970s, when Davis was mentoring Obama, Davis was still a member of one of the oldest communist front groups in America, the American Committee for the Protection of the Foreign Born, which had used this line of racial agitation to divide America, to polarize America along racial lines, and to advance Soviet communism in America.
Dr. Kengor, exactly how long did Frank Marshall Davis mentor Barack Obama? Was it approximately 9 or so years?
Yeah, it would have been from 1970. They were introduced in the fall of 1970, and Frank was with them until 1979. In fact, in Dreams from My Father, right before Obama left for college, he went and he met with Frank. And the parting advice that he got from Frank before he went off to college was this diatribe against the American way. Obama actually quotes Frank in Dreams from My Father. Frank Marshall Davis says, they'll teach you about the American way and all that blank, you know, expletive.
Right.
When I saw that, Mark, it struck me because I had been reading Davis's columns that he wrote for the Chicago Star and the Honolulu Record, which were the Communist Party publications in Chicago and Hawaii. And Davis was constantly blasting the American way in those columns, too. So, in fact, in the start of this book, The Communist, I lead off with a quote that Davis, blasting the American way in the Chicago Star in the mid-1940s, and then Obama quoting Davis, blasting the American way in Dreams of My Father in the mid-90s. So you see this literal half century of consistency in statements there from what Davis wrote and what Obama remembered that Davis told him.
Now, one of the things we need to make clear about Frank Marshall Davis, and I know this was my misperception early on, is people said, well, you know, Barack Obama was mentored by a card-carrying communist. And you start thinking to people who are card-carrying NRA members. I mean, they pay their dues once a year. They get a sticker to put on their car, and then they pretty much forget about it until it's time to pay their dues again. He was not a card-carrying communist in the same sense that a lot of us are card-carrying NRA members. He was, in fact, very, very active in the Communist Party. In addition to carrying the card, he was just affiliated with numerous organizations, numerous communist fronts, according to your book. Expand on that a little bit.
Well, that's right. And just to be a member of the Communist Party was a huge deal. I mean, there were a lot of Americans who were, you know, small C communists. They, you know, they followed the ideology, but to actually join the party, that was very rare. At the peak of Communist Party USA membership in the 1930s, CPUSA never had more than 100,000 members, and that's because so many American communists realized that, you know, they didn't know if they really wanted to quite literally, you know, toe the line of Stalin and the Kremlin. If they wanted to literally pledge themselves to that Soviet America, you know, they weren't willing to go quite that far. To fight for the triumph of Soviet power in the United States. But Davis was willing to do that, and in fact, Davis actually joined the party during World War II after the signing of the Hitler-Stalin Pact, which was the pact that between Stalin and Hitler that precipitated World War II, that sent a lot of Jewish American communists out of the party, you know, because they couldn't possibly support Stalin after he did that. I mean, Stalin thereby facilitated the Holocaust. Davis actually joined after the Hitler-Stalin Pact, not before it, but after it. When World War II ended, he became not just a writer for the Chicago Star, the Communist Party publication in Chicago, but he became the founding editor-in-chief from 1946 to 48. So, I mean, this was no small fish. This was a very influential American communist.
Well, let's also talk about his flip-flop regarding World War II. Initially, he was calling FDR and Winston Churchill warmongers, and then when Hitler broke the pact with Stalin and invaded Russia, we saw a complete flip-flop on the part of Frank Marshall Davis, who suddenly said, wait a minute, we need to go to war against Hitler.
Right. Yeah, the entire Communist Party of America did that. They overnight, this is unbelievable, they had a group called the American Peace Mobilization, which agitated to keep America out of the war in 1940, and also to deny any lend-lease or any aid to Britain or any of these other countries. And why did they have that position? Because at that point, Stalin was allied with Hitler. Now, that group, the American Peace Mobilization, and people are going to think this is unbelievable, it couldn't be this blatant, but it was. On June 22, 1941, the day that Hitler betrayed Stalin and betrayed the pact and invaded the Soviet Union, on that very date, the American Peace Mobilization became the American People's Mobilization, and they became in favor of all-out aid to Britain, immediate U.S. entrance into the war, everything. And Davis, what really drew Davis into the party in Chicago was his work with the American Peace Mobilization. And I need to add here a very, very important point. In that Communist Front group, he also worked with Robert R. Taylor, who was grandfather of Valerie Jarrett. Valerie Jarrett is today Barack Obama's right-hand woman. And he also worked with Vernon Jarrett, who later on would be Valerie Jarrett's father-in-law. So you know, those two literal kin of Valerie Jarrett worked with Obama's mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, in Communist Front groups, in that particular Communist Front group in the 1940s.
Since you've brought up the Valerie Jarrett connection to both Vernon Jarrett, her father-in-law, and her, I guess it's her maternal grandfather as well,
right.
Taylor, I'm sorry?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Let's talk about Axelrod. I mean, he rubbed elbows with a few communists himself, did he not? Or at least communist sympathizers.
He did. Frank Marshall Davis also worked with the Cantor family, Harry and David Cantor. And the Cantors were so far to the left, the senior Cantor, Harry, he had been head of the Boston Communist Party, ran for vice president of the United States on the Communist Party USA ticket. They were such dedicated communists that in the 1930s, the entire family uprooted and moved from Boston to Moscow, where they actually worked. The senior Cantor actually worked for Stalin's government as an official translator of Lenin's writings.
My goodness.
Now after doing that, they uprooted on a dime and relocated to Chicago. And it was there in Chicago that the Cantors would work with Frank Marshall Davis, including at the Chicago Star. They also worked with him at the Lincoln School, a communist school in Chicago. They worked with him on a group of a meatpacking industry union, which Davis favored nationalizing.
Was that the school that was called the Little Red School?
Exactly. So yeah. That's right. And everybody in America knew the Abraham Lincoln School in Chicago was a communist school.
Wow.
They worked with him in the Chicago Star. Now, how does this relate to Axelrod? Well, in the 1970s, when David Axelrod went to college at the University of Chicago, the Cantor family mentored David Axelrod. So all of these folks, the people today that are most responsible for Obama being in the White House and day-to-day operations, Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and David Axelrod, all had mentors, family members, the Cantors, Robert R. Taylor, Vernon Jarrett. All these people worked with Frank Marshall Davis, Obama's mentor in Chicago in the 1940s. They all knew each other.
That is absolutely amazing. So let me throw this question at you, Paul. If you have a president who was mentored for 9 years by a communist, whose top two advisors were either related to communists or mentored by communists, are we being too kind when we say their goal is socialism? I mean, are they maybe shooting higher than that?
Sure. We can clearly say these people are on the left and on the far left. You know, these aren't your grandfather's Democrats. I mean, these aren't Harry Truman Democrats. They're not John F. Kennedy Democrats. These people have progressively pushed the party to the left. In fact, one of the things that Frank Marshall Davis did was when he realized that the Communist Party couldn't be elected in the United States, they tried Henry Wallace's Progressive Party in 1948, which didn't work. And in fact, Davis realized that his own party had been so infiltrated by communists. He saw what they did in the Korean War that he eventually repudiated all of them, including the party itself. And so guys like Frank Marshall Davis, Communist Party, they made a concerted effort to infiltrate the Democratic Party. And Davis, I print the pages in the book, in my book from his FBI file. He actually, 1948, 49, 1950, having seen all of this, decided to run for a local Democratic precinct office for the Territorial Convention of Hawaii and was elected to it. So here you had Davis formally leaving the Communist Party. That or the party went underground, and I don't know that he ever actually left it, but still being a communist and going through the Democratic Party instead. And Democrats, liberals, you don't like hearing this? Well, then please do something to change it, would you? That's not my party. I would prefer that the other major American, I'm a Republican, but I would prefer that the other major party in America not go that far to the left, because I've got a lot of Americans that don't know any of this stuff, and they're going to vote for Democrat no matter what.
Oh, absolutely. I hate to break this off, but we have to do a little business with America. We will be right back in just a minute with Dr. Paul Kingor, the author of The Communist, Frank Marshall Davis, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mentor.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
And if you'd like to learn how you can get a solar generator for your family, just go to teapartypowerhour.com and click on the appropriate ad. While you're there, you'll also see ads for solar ovens, extended life light bulbs, and life-saving survival food packets.
Are you worried about the economy? Have you ever wondered if the politicians and the bankers are going to bring the whole thing crashing down? If so, pay close attention, because in an economic meltdown, non-hybrid seeds could become more valuable than even silver and gold. After all, securing a source of food for your family is the single most important thing you can do. Introducing the Survival Seed Bank, the perfect mix of germination-tested non-hybrid seeds. You get enough seeds to plant a full-acre crisis garden that can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And the best part is that these seeds have not been genetically modified in any way. Remember, in a real economic crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. Prepare your family today.
Prepare your family today by going to TeaPartyPowerHour.com and clicking on the ad for the Survival Seed Bank. Now, while you're there, you're going to see ads for a lot of other products that can help your family in the event of a disaster, whether the disaster is government-made or natural. You're going to see ads for things like solar-powered ovens, solar-powered electrical supplies, and freeze-dried food that can provide your family with immediate nutrition in the event of an economic meltdown. Once again, the place to go is TeaPartyPowerHour.com. And we are back at the Tea Party Power Hour. I want to remind everyone who may be tired of Congress not doing its job, not investigating the various eligibility issues with Barack Obama, to please sign our petition demanding congressional action. Just go to congressdoyourjob.com and sign a petition while you're there. Leave us a little note. It just might get read on the air. Now, back to our guest, Dr. Paul Kengor. We were just discussing how people are willing to vote for Obama no matter what. I mean, Catholics voted for him even though he's pro-abortion. Jews voted for him, although he's the most anti-Semitic president we've had of all time. Paul, it's just nuts, isn't it?
It is just nuts. And I'm in addition to being a Republican, I'm a pro-life Catholic, and I'm constantly. This is just absolutely maddening. I tell my Democratic friends when I criticize their party for becoming so pro-abortion. You can count on one hand, at best two, the number of pro-life Democrats there today in the House of Representatives. And so I'll plead with my Democratic friends who are pro-life, go change your party. I can't do it. You keep voting for these guys no matter what they do, even as they're forcing me now to fund abortion drugs through this HHS mandate. Could you please change your own party?
Well, you know, one of the things you might tell them, Paul, it comes right out of your book, and that's if they go back and take a look at what Margaret Sanger was really all about. You point out in the book that in 1926, she actually gave a speech to the KKK in New Jersey where she talked about her Negro plan, which was going to eliminate the weeds in America, the imbeciles in America, the morons in America, and also went as far as to say that we needed birth control in order to fix our quote-unquote racial problem. So this woman was racist from the get-go. The Democratic Party is not supposed to be about that. Maybe someone should point out that this was a clear eugenics goal on the part of Margaret Sanger and that she was a highly racist individual.
Yeah, she was. She had a Negro project. She wanted birth control for the purposes, as she put it. She said at that time she wasn't pushing for abortion. She wanted birth control for the purposes of race improvement. And now today, her legacy, Planned Parenthood, is the single largest abortion provider in America, and disproportionately takes the lives of more unborn African American babies than any other. I just saw data the other day. It's up at LifeNews.com. How 78% of abortions in Mississippi are of African American babies.
Dr. Kengor, this is just it's fascinating stuff, but it's infuriating stuff as well. And let me tell you about a thought that went through my head as I read your book, or as I'm reading your book. It seems to me, as a child who was born, you know, a year and a half after Obama was born, somebody that came up in the 70s and the 80s, went to college, got out in the mid-80s, that the whole time I've been alive and conscious of what's going on around me, television and entertainment has tried to make anybody who even uses the word communist or pinko commie look like a complete idiot, as if no such creature exists on the planet. And when you see these mad people referencing commies, they're just conspiracy theorists and they're nuts and they're unhinged and so forth. I mean, if you take a look at the show MASH, for example, which I used to be a big fan of when I was a kid, everybody that used the word commie was a bad person and an idiot. Colonel
right.
Flagg used to use the word commie all the time. Frank Burns used to use the word commie all the time. Margaret Houlihan used to use the word all the time. You go to Barney Miller, the Inspector Luger used to use the word all the time. And it seems like people my age, I'm 49, have been conditioned our entire lives to think that anybody that suggested that the United States was crawling with communists was an absolute fool. But after reading your book, it's pretty obvious to me that we owe Joseph McCarthy an apology, because there were hotbeds of communism all over this country, Hawaii, Chicago, for example. It seems to me that we were, basically run over or running over with communists at one point. Is that an exaggeration?
No, there were a very large number. Now, they were never a majority, thankfully, but we were right to be so suspicious because they operated under concealment, and you used the term you used the word idiots a couple of times. I mean, Vladimir Lenin used the phrase useful idiots. In the original translation, there was more like the word deaf mute, but it's been translated into useful idiots. And dupes was another term. As you noted, my last book was called Dupes. And they realized what Lenin understood and what American communists understood was that the more people who believed that any suggestion that they were communists was just the latest McCarthyite read under every bed scare, that simply worked to communist interests. And liberals were very naive about this, so naive that they're the ones that got infiltrated. Ronald Reagan, who's basically my political mentor, he talked about how when he is a Democrat in Hollywood in the 1940s, he had joined several communist front groups just thinking that they were fellow liberal Democrat progressives just like him. But they weren't. This was a very real, a very serious threat. Now, one thing that conservatives need to be very, very careful about is themselves not exaggerating. Just like you'll get the left who wants to smear everyone on the right as a fascist or a racist or that kind of thing. We've got to be real careful about just calling anybody on the left a commie or a communist.
Sure.
And then when the real McCoy comes along, someone like Frank Marshall Davis, and we say Obama was mentored by a literal card-carrying communist, then the left says, come on, you guys call everybody a communist. We need to be more careful about that ourselves. And I appreciated what you said, Mark, about Jared and Obama and Axelrod. Are they pushing us more into a socialist direction? And I think that's more accurate than communist.
Mm-hmm.
And even the term maybe redistributionist, collectivist. I say in the book, and I've said in many interviews on this book, that the title of the book is The Communist. That's about Frank Marshall Davis. It's not about Obama.
Sure.
I cannot prove to you that Obama is a communist. I don't have a Communist Party card number like I do on Davis. Now, I could point to forms of rhetoric that Obama uses. I could point to influences like Davis. In this book, I do lay out at great length the fact that I think Obama very well might have been a communist at Occidental College. I think that frankly, was probably the case, especially going by one person's testimony, that Dr. John Drew, who I quote at length. But I couldn't, in a court of law right now, beyond some circumstantial arguments, try to advance the case that our current president is a communist. I certainly could never show that he was ever a member of the Communist Party. So we need to be careful about these terms, And but back to your original point, yeah, the left has been incredibly naive from the outset. Well, not from the outset. As I said, Woodrow Wilson and some of these guys got it. But you know, much of the American left has been very naive for a long time about communists.
It certainly sounds that way. Now, one of the things you mentioned in your book, and this just knocked me off my feet, was that at one point communists were trying to infiltrate the YMCA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all those organizations. YMCA, I mean, the churches, the mainline churches. And I found the biggest dupes, Herb Romerstein, he's the greatest living expert on communism in America, who himself had once been a communist. When I first started doing the research for dupes, I asked them, I said, was there any particular group of Americans, of liberals, that were most susceptible to communist influence, to being duped? And he said, yes. He said, social justice, religious left, American liberals. They were the biggest suckers of them all. That's the phrase he used. United Methodist Church, the Episcopal Church, and what would become Presbyterian Church USA. They were all very susceptible. But they had their eyes, you know, communists, this isn't, it was a conspiracy. They operated in the dark, in concealment, never disclosing their full intentions, and they looked for groups like this to infiltrate and take over.
That's absolutely incredible to me. I think if someone had told me prior to your book that communists even tried to infiltrate the YMCA and the YWCA, I probably would have said, oh, come on, that's just crazy. But it almost sounds like there was a time in America where they were infiltrating a lot of different groups. And as you said, there were dupers and dupees. But, you know, and even Reagan, God bless him, you know, joined a few groups without realizing what they were. But I don't think people my age get just how bad the problem was. I think that's part of the problem.
Right. Yeah, and here again, liberals, listen to me. Groups like the NAACP, the ACLU, they were constantly battling these guys. The unions, AFL-CIO, you ask anybody who was a union member, grandfathers, old uncles, you know, from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, they were constantly fighting the communists. This was a battle raging within the left. You know, they were always looking for these groups to take over, and the ACLU was totally penetrated from the very beginning. The founder, Roger Baldwin, I think was a small C communist at one point, but never joined the party. Now Baldwin, by the 40s and 50s, finally woke up and realized how bad these guys were, and he started having an actual loyalty oath among ACLU members to swear that they weren't closet members of the Communist Party.
My goodness.
Because they had to deal with these guys all the time. They were a nuisance. And now here today to have guys like Frank being protected by these same liberals because of Obama, this is history repeating itself, and liberals once again sort of playing the useful idiot dupe role.
Now, in the time we have left, tell people where they can get the book. I'm assuming wherever fine books are sold, but go ahead and give the listening audience some specifics.
Yeah, they should have it at all the major bookstores, Barnes & Noble. It did hit number one in nonfiction at both BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, and it made number nine on the New York Times list. And I say that because that makes it all the more remarkable that I haven't had literally a single inquiry from anybody in the mainstream media.
Of course you won't.
Yeah, even with the book making the New York Times bestseller list, they're wow. Still ignoring it. But you could get it at any Barnes & Noble. If they don't have it there, they should. And of course, you could order from Amazon. It's available as an e-book as well, and also even as an audio book.
Wow. Well, you've got all the...
And in my audio book, I don't purge Frank like Obama.
Once again, Paul, thanks for being here. It's been an absolute delight having you on the show.
Well, thanks, Mark. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. And we'll be right back with Carl Gallups, the author of The Magic Man in the Sky.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
And if you'd like to learn how you can get a solar generator for your family, just go to teapartypowerhour.com and click on the appropriate ad. While you're there, you'll also see ads for solar ovens, extended life light bulbs, and life-saving survival food packets.
Are you worried about the economy? Have you ever wondered if the politicians and the bankers are going to bring the whole thing crashing down? If so, pay close attention. Because in an economic meltdown, non-hybrid seeds could become more valuable than even silver and gold. After all, securing a source of food for your family is the single most important thing you can do. Introducing the Survival Seed Bank, the perfect mix of germination-tested non-hybrid seeds. You get enough seeds to plant a full-acre crisis garden that can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And the best part is that these seeds have not been genetically modified in any way. Remember, in a real economic crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. Prepare your family today.
Prepare your family today by going to teapartypowerhour.com and clicking on the ad for the Survival Seed Bank. Now, while you're there, you're going to see ads for a lot of other products that can help your family in the event of a disaster, whether the disaster is government-made or natural. You're going to see ads for things like solar-powered ovens, solar-powered electrical supplies, and freeze-dried food that can provide your family with immediate nutrition in the event of an economic meltdown. Once again, the place to go is teapartypowerhour.com. Welcome back to the Tea Party Power Hour. My next guest is Carl Gallups. He is the longtime senior pastor of Hickory Hammock Baptist Church in Milton, Florida. He is a conservative talk radio host, so you know he's got to be a good guy. And he's here today to talk to us about his book, The Magic Man in the Sky, Effectively Defending the Christian Faith. Carl, welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate this that glowing introduction.
Absolutely. Now, let's start with the title, The Magic Man in the Sky. Now,
yeah.
That almost sounds like the way an atheist would refer to the concept of a god if they were making fun of it. Oh, yeah, right, there's a magic man in the sky. I'm sure you didn't mean it that way. Tell us what the significance of the title is.
Yeah, no, I will. And I'm so glad you noticed that that sounds like something the atheist would use, because the premise of my book, and the book covers so much concerning the proving the existence of God and the meaning of life and why we're here and what it's all about and is evolution really settled science, etc. But the title comes from the atheistic evolutionist secular argument of, well, I would rather believe in settled scientific fact than some magic man in the sky like you Christians do. So I took their words, turned it around on them, put it in the title, The Magic Man in the Sky, Effectively Defending the Christian Faith. And then from there, I launch into it. Now, you don't have to turn but the first one or two pages in the book, and it is explained, you know, why the title is that way. I mean, as soon as people pick it up and start reading it, they get it. But the title's pretty provocative, isn't it, Mark?
I think it is. And, you know, you mentioned, one of the questions you mentioned was, why are we here? You know, I can remember when my son was about 4 years old, he came to me and he said, Daddy, where do we come from? And I said, well, you know, my family comes from Czechoslovakia and Sicily, and your mother's family comes from England. And he goes, no, not our family, all people. So
yeah.
That's only a step away from why are we here, which, if I can borrow a line from an old Time Life commercial, a question a child might ask, but not a childish question.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, that's one of the question of the ages. I mean, there's several question of the ages. Can we prove the existence of God? Why are we here? Why is there so much pain and suffering? Why does evil exist? All of these are addressed in my book, and those are just those are just a few of the myriad of subjects that are addressed. And we're getting rave reviews, Mark. I've got to tell you, I've got to plug my publishers here, WND Books. They are
sure.
Amazing. They are amazing. They have more best-selling books percentage than any other publisher in the world. I'm so honored to be with WND Books. They've been tremendous throughout this process. And so let me tell you what we did. They decided to put it up for pre-release on Amazon. It shot to number one in Science and Religion. It shot to number one bestseller. It shot to number one in new releases. They ran out. They put them on back order. They had to order another whole truckload. It just went crazy before it was even released. It's got a five-star rating, 17, 18 reviewers already who have read it and who have commented. It's just been an amazing phenomenon. God's hand is all over this. It's really, really ministering to people's hearts.
One of the questions that you just mentioned was, why is there so much pain and suffering? In the book, you sort of liken what we go through here on Earth as a boot camp of sorts. Yeah. Explain to my listeners what you mean by that.
Yeah, well, just a quick explanation. And again, if they get the book, I go into so much more detail. So in case it seems to some people I'm glossing over it here, the answer to that is, Mark, look, this world, according to the Word of God and according to what we see around us, and of course, if you come from a biblical worldview, you measure everything through the revealed truth of God's Word. And this world, as it stands now, is a boot camp. It is a testing ground, if you will. It's not meant to be a pleasure paradise, although that paradise is coming. A recreated world with Jesus ruling and reigning is coming, and the Bible says all things will be made new. No more pain, no more suffering, no more death. But that's not here yet. So what is this about? It's a weeding out process. It's the weed and the tares. It's a boot camp. You know, only a few good men become Marines, so to speak. And so what happens is, here's the deal, Mark. I tell people this all the time. Look, we want to wind up like Job, who could stand before God in the face of losing everything that was precious to him and say, though he slay me, yet will I serve him. And God is not out to make Jobs out of all of us. But what he is out to do is to be kind of like that drill sergeant who is whipping us into shape, getting us ready for the life and eternity that is to come. And our position in all of this is to say, you know what, God? Thank you for your deep love. Thank you for your grace and your mercy. Thank you that you care about me, that you communicate with me, that you are involved in my life. But if you never bless me again, if you never answered another prayer, I still know that you are God, and I still will serve you. If you can get to the point in your life where your heart is something like that, Mark, you have passed the test. You have come through boot camp, because when God recreates paradise and populates it with his creatures, heaven and earth, under one head, Jesus Christ, by the way, Ephesians 1 talks about that at length, then it will be a paradise that our hearts all long for even now, Mark. And that's my short answer.
One of the things that a lot of people will say is, well, if God exists, why does he remain unseen? What is your answer to that?
Well, my answer to that is this. We are not equipped to see God in the physical sense that we see things in our world. And there are biblical and spiritual reasons for that. However, God did allow himself to be seen in the person of Jesus Christ as a human being. However, my book, I go to great lengths using some fresh illustrations that are specific only to me. I mean, as far as I know, I'm the only one that's ever used these illustrations. And I show how our world is filled with examples. Like, for example, let's take an anthill. Ants don't know that we exist. They can't see us in the sense that we see them. They operate by smell and by sonar type of ejections. But ants have no idea of the world all around them, Mark. They have no idea. They don't know about cities and skyscrapers and children and bicycles and airplanes and space travel and computers and technology and interstate highways and automobiles and airplanes. They have no idea that any of that exists. Yet, Mark, it exists all around them in complete physical reality in their world, and they're in the midst of it. Now, Jesus told us something similar, Mark. He said, look, the kingdom of God is all around you. He says, it's among you, if you will. And he says, yet you are not equipped to see it. This is why believers must walk by faith, watch this, and not by sight. Because just as an ant could theorize to another aunt, and I'm being a little silly here, but what if two aunts were walking down their street one day and one of them said, you know, I have this theory that these giant creatures live all around us and there's a whole other world all around us. The other aunt would look and say, oh, you're stupid. Because you can't see it, it doesn't exist. Well, the problem is the first aunt would have been correct. You know, it does exist. It's all around the anthill. Just because they can't see it doesn't mean we don't exist. And this is what Jesus came, one of the things Jesus came to reveal, is that there is a dimension of reality, if you will, all around us that is as physical as we are. It is the domain of God. And you know what, Mark? Quantum mechanics, the study of quantum science, proves that multiple dimensions of reality are entirely possible. And my book goes into great detail in that as well.
So I hate to use a term from science fiction, but it's almost sort of like a parallel, I don't want to say universe, but existence.
Well, but that's not science fiction. Again, quantum physics and quantum mechanics have proven the possibility of parallel existences. And I don't want to get into the science fiction-y type of portrayal, but what quantum mechanics has now demonstrated scientifically is what the Bible has been saying forever. I mean, even the book of Hebrews, the book of Romans, it says that we know by faith that everything that is created was created from things that we cannot see. And I mean, that scientific principle was said thousands of years ago, and now quantum mechanics has proven it to be correct. And we know that quantum particles operate with entirely different laws, physical laws, than the laws that govern our universe, yet it is those quantum particles that create the laws by which we operate, the laws of gravity, thermodynamics, etc. So, yeah, science has proven the possibility of parallel, if you will, or multiple dimensions of reality, one being unseen to the other. And this is the hope that the Word of God gives to believers and Christians, that God has a whole dimension of reality waiting on those who know Him and love Him, that death is not the final answer, death is not the victory, and that for the believer, we step into a dimension of reality that the Bible calls paradise. Jesus told the thief on the cross, "Today you will be with me in paradise."
One of the things that you can't help but notice is that people spend a lot of time and a lot of energy looking for proof that our lives go on beyond this physical existence. And I would say that to a certain extent that need to prove that is manifested in the success of all these paranormal shows that seem to be populating the television these days. People are out there saying, I just want to see a little proof that the other side exists, that this isn't the end of the road. You know, some people might look at that as people are getting into the occult, but I see it as people wanting proof to a certain extent. Let's put the ghost shows aside here and ask, what proof is there that God exists?
Yeah, well, two veins of answer there. First, what proof is there that there's life on the other side? That was the first question you asked, basically. And then secondly, what proof is there that God exists in the first place? Well, the answer to your first question, what proof is there that there's life on the other side? That's the whole purpose of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. When he came out of that tomb alive, after being witnessed by hundreds, even thousands of people, beatings and death and a spear rammed in his side and a Roman crucifixion and a tomb guarded by Roman soldiers and disciples that were terrified and fled. Yet for 2,000 years, the body has been missing, and he was witnessed, by Paul said in 1 Corinthians, by over 500 people at one time. And what was it he told his disciples? He said, now look at me. He says, because I live, now you shall know that you shall live also. So the proof that the world wants about is there life on the other side has been given to us beautifully, perfectly, powerfully, irrefutably in the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
We are just about out of time.
Can I tell folks how to get it, Mark?
You know what? I was just about to invite you to do that.
Because it has become a bestseller before it was even released, it will be available everywhere. But right now, the quickest, easiest, simplest way to get it is either at Amazon.com or WND Superstore.
Carl, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark. It's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillard.